reasoning is quite a fitting one in the matters of ultimate reality.
Depending upon the characteristic knowledge, when the unalloyed reasoning of the soul determines the conclusions about the supreme reality, they can be accepted as realistic.
Right. So you see, through this whole point is that means up to that he's hasn't really brought up the element of devotional service or anything, right? He's just presenting something that logically about the nature of the soul and the nature of its power of reasoning, right? In other words, if the soul is in its natural pure state, it can understand transcendence. If it's not in its natural pure state, then its concept of what is going on is always going to be tinged with the mundane. Right? No matter how what they're looking at, it still will have the mundane mood, mundane effect.
The soul is not on its own, you know, because it's small. How much can it figure out by itself?
No, but that means that's the whole point. It can't.
Yeah. So without the parampara, you know, it has to be
Impersonalist, or he believes in God, but he'll believe from his own perspective, or they take the material energy as God, or they take it that it's too much trouble and we'll just destroy ourselves. So they either come up with some kind of religion based on some kind of faith, right? How do you say? Yeah, based on faith, but it's still going to be dealing with one's own perception, right? Or it's going to be, you're just using perception, that you don't really believe in a supreme person, but you may or may not include it in your philosophy, because if you don't, it won't become popular, and if you do, it will. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if you add, you can come up with whatever philosophy you like, but it won't become popular unless you add into it the element of this, a supreme deity, some form that they can, you know, people can relate to, and you're supposed to be nice and good and cooperate with others. If you have these two elements, then it will attract attention. You don't have these elements, it won't attract attention. Right? So, but it doesn't mean that there aren't philosophers that don't come up with their own. So they follow it, they believe in it, their book may write about it, and that, and so one or two people who read it, but otherwise there's generally very little following. Right? But something else where you have a deity, you yourself can perform some kind of prayer and worship, you can be nice and good to others, then everybody can do that, so then they can feel I'm being religious by doing those two things. You know what I'm saying? So even if the deity is the material energy, you know, or an imagined deity, still it's a deity, it's something that people can relate to. So the more of substance it is, the more it can expand. Right? If you're dealing with this supreme person, it can expand more, but it will be limited by one's own mundane perception. Right? And so then that will be fueled by, you know, position and economics and all kinds of things. And so then you have a lot of problems like that.
Does that make sense?
Studying with, you know, yoga from the international school, and you know these are all people and their leaders are very sincere spiritual, you know, seekers. The leaders, you know, the Shivananda and his followers, you know. And by associating, because we as devotees, we are within ISKCON, everything is given to us, you know, like on a plate, you know, Krishna Supreme, Krishna God, the highest conclusion, so everything is given to us, and we just. And we can judge everyone else, they don't know anything, they're stupid, they don't know. But constitutionally, they can't figure it out, and it's given to them. That's what I realized, you know, from seeing, that was my kind of experience of seeing it from the outside, being with those people, that these are spiritual seekers, but they just can't get to the personal conception of God. They just can't. They can't realize God as
well. They can, but also there's the element they wouldn't want to. Because if they wanted to, then Krishna is in the heart, he put him in contact with the bona fide devotees.
Yeah.
Like that. So if by your going there to that studio and by that association, then they took up Krishna consciousness, then you could say they were sincere. You know what I'm saying? But if not, then it's unfortunate, you know. But the point is it's understood in this age that not necessarily there are many, very many people who are fortunate, you know what I'm saying? It may come up, may not, but in any case, the devotees then create an opportunity in which people can do something, and then it creates the interest. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes or no?
Yeah, they can do something to keep them with the animal.
Yeah, and so by associating with that enough, then that develops an interest in the concept of who's God, not necessarily in Krishna consciousness. Then that contact with the devotees, then one will, you know, actually try to understand. You know what I'm saying? Because in the beginning, it's a jnata sukriti. So when a jnata sukriti increases enough, then one takes up the association of devotees. Does that make sense? One gets that faith, takes up that association. Before that, then one doesn't. You know, so one may get so much in one lifetime, it may take many lifetimes. Whatever it is, until it builds up to a point where the individual decides to take up Krishna consciousness. Right? So then the jnata sukriti then turns into devotional service. Right? But anything other than devotional service cannot generate devotional service. So as you're observing, is they can be there, be very intelligent, very qualified, very analytical, very studious, but still never find God. Like Mother Yashoda can't put a rope around him, you know, with her, you know, with her devotion. How can anyone else, you know, just by their scholarliness, you know, because any of their scholarliness is going to be based on their perception of what's around them, and then they're going to file that away in their memory. And then any new situation, they're going to compare that to whatever they have observed in the past. You know what I'm saying? And then contemplating that, then they're going to come up with some action they're going to perform. You know what I'm saying? So they're always working with contemplating, you know, this means the mixed, in other words, the conditional perception of I and mine, or I'm the controller and the enjoyer. Then mixed with observation of the material energy, you know, in gaining knowledge and all that, or having done that, then that's mixed with application or action. So you always have this mixed consciousness, right? But that's you're dealing with knowledge and action. So how could it ever actually be dealing with the transcendental? It just can't. So only by the association of devotees can they get that. Because otherwise there's very, very intelligent, qualified people. But the problem is it's good for mundane things. So they're good at yoga, you know, good at doing those things, or yoga for the health, or for, you know, different medical things, or just for, you know, make the mind peaceful, or some other things like that. They're very good at those things, you know. Bhaktivinoda Thakur saying, engineering, this, that, as long as it's some mundane mechanistic dealing with the material energy, they do quite well because they use their reasoning, their knowledge, and action, and so then they get a result. But they're observing dead matter, and from that they're able to move the dead matter around. But we're talking about sentience, consciousness. That you cannot perceive with the mundane senses. You know what I'm saying? That's the difficulty.
The mixed reasoning is a quite unfit one in the matters of ultimate reality. Depending upon the characteristic knowledge, when the unalloyed reasoning of the soul determines the conclusions about the supreme reality, they can be accepted as realistic. Right? Unalloyed reasoning of the soul determines conclusions. That's why then we hear from the acharyas. We can't make up our own ideas. Here it may be inquired that what is that known as characteristic knowledge? The soul is transcendental and full of knowledge. that inherent knowledge of unalloyed soul is known as the characteristic knowledge. Right, so the inherent knowledge of the soul, like that, I'm not sure. He gives some, okay, he gives some qualities here. I think he's good. Okay. This characteristic knowledge of the soul is its eternal companion. It is not born of the empiric experience with the matter. A certain process of that characteristic knowledge is known as unalloyed reasoning. The signs of that characteristic knowledge are that even prior to the generation of materialistic knowledge, a jiva soul realizes that. Okay, then he gives 12 points here. 1, I am existent. 2, I will continue to exist. 3, there is an inherent bliss in me. 4, a certain great principle is there as a shelter of my bliss. 5, it is my characteristic nature to be depending up on that great shelter. 6, I am eternally the follower of that shelter. Okay. 7, the shelter is exceedingly beautiful. 8, I am not powerful enough to discard that shelter. 9, the present condition of mind is remorseful. 10, it is fit for me to culture again the servitudinal association of that shelter by discarding this remorseful condition. 11, this world is not my eternal abode. And 12, I do not have any eternal well-being by the development of this world. In the absence of taking recourse to this characteristic knowledge, the reasoning becomes mixed with the matter and only remains delirious. Even in the materialistic science, the mixed reasoning is made liable to accept certain amount of characteristic knowledge.
Delirious?
Hmm? Delirious is the word delirious? Yeah, delirious. Because delirious means that one is basically not slightly crazy, not understanding things as they are. Why you have experienced this deliriousness or something?
No, maybe I have, yeah.
So, meaning past tense, not present tense. Even in the materialistic science, okay, so unless one's dealing with this characteristic knowledge, then the reasoning becomes mixed with matter. It means you're going to be based on materialistic perception is going to be the basis of how you're going to view things, how you're going to decide what's right and wrong. Otherwise, if you use this, then it's having a delirious moment or something. Okay, so then it's going to be mixed. It won't be the same. But at the same time, he's pointing out, even in the materialistic science, the mixed reasoning is made liable to accept certain amount of characteristic knowledge. Unless certain preliminary views are accepted in the beginning of learning arithmetic, astronomy, etc., the studies can never have any progress. In the spiritual field, also, when the preliminary characteristic revelations are accepted, the subsequent establishments will become realistic. All right. So in other words, even you're starting with the materialistic, the mixed reasoning, if you want to make any progress in it, you have to accept the characteristic. Yes. Basically, there should be faith, or at least there should be, because here is what he's dealing with. Here is just the inherent nature. As of now, he hasn't really discussed, because he said he'll discuss it later. So about the characteristic, knowledge.
So here he's been discussing it all through. So one could say, well, he's discussing it alone. He's just discussing it in inherently what's the nature of the soul. You know what I'm saying? This is a very, very powerful tool in the preaching, is that one is able to deal with just the nuts and bolts of what is the nature of everything. Right? But, so in other words, you're dealing with the tattva aspect of it. But that's based on devotion. You can't separate the tattva and the rasa. But you're able to present it in such a way that other personalities who may not have that kind of faith, so therefore they would not appreciate the relationship and interaction, then you're just dealing with logic. You know, so Srila Prabhupada would use this logic. We see here Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The acharyas then will use this a lot. So depending upon what it is, it can be given in relationship to culture, because that may be common ground. Or in this case, it's just pure reasoning. There's no, you're not even relating to the culture specifically. Other, it's in, means it's inferred, but you're not using a cultural example like that. Does that make sense? Because this kind of discussion, then people will think, oh, he's reasonable, he's broad-minded, he's not. Otherwise, then, when you deal in the faith part, because he says, even in here, it's very obvious that it's foolish. How would it work? You know? But he's saying it from the platform of just reasoning. So there's nothing for the other party to really grab onto. They can argue some points, you know, like that. But you don't get into an argument over Krishna consciousness. You don't get an argument over Bhagavan. So you don't hurt anybody's feelings. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, like the ninth offense, you don't, discuss topics with those who are not interested. Otherwise, then they will make offenses against Krishna and the devotees. So that's worse than before. Before, they're just in ignorance, but now they're becoming offensive. Right? So this way, nobody can be offended. Right? Because you're just dealing with the principle of God and higher forces and supreme being and like this. But you haven't actually named. So if they're not so interested or inclined, they haven't actually offended Krishna as a person. You know what I'm saying? So it's a very safe platform to discuss with those who are, you know, want, you know, intellectually stimulated on the subject. You know? Like that. Even if there are others who are emotional on the subject, you know, sentimental on the subject, by using this method, then one could get by their all their sentiment. You know? Because otherwise, then they're so worried about their particular method that they're missing actually the point of their relationship with Godhead, their relationship with the world. What are they doing? You know, have you been saved? Saved from what? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's just a logical thing. You know. I said, Bimala Prasad, you know, they come up to him and go, did you find Jesus? And he says, oh, I didn't know he was lost. You know, stuff like that. Yeah. So, that kind of where just sentiment, then these things can possibly be used for anybody who does have a little bit of brain. But if otherwise it's just pure sentiment you're working with, then difficulty. Yes?
I was going to ask by Krishna, have you been saved? Asking from what? Didn't know.
Yeah, that's the thing. So that's the point, is logical presentation of the philosophy, you know, based on this Achit Ishwara, you know, then that's, at that point, they can't get, because otherwise it's all in the sentiment, be good, be nice, okay, but why be good? Who said? You know what I'm saying? So therefore, that, they don't know. You know, some will be able to say, okay, well, it says here in the scripture, or somebody said, you know, that, or, but the point is then the point is it being good and being nice that's important, or is it that following the order of God, the laws of God, is important? Right? Because they're putting too much emphasis on the ritual. To the point, it's not a problem to emphasize the ritual as long as you understand the philosophy. You know what I'm saying? There's a balance. To that degree you understand the philosophy, to that degree you can put an emphasis on the ritual. But if you don't understand the philosophy and you only are putting an emphasis on the ritual, then the difficulty is it becomes, then tends to become dogmatic and other things like that. So it's not actually very broad then. It doesn't accommodate the need of the soul for knowledge, right? They're trying to bring out that element of affection so that the faith side and all that has something, because affection is there, but who are we having faith in? Who are we? Who are we having faith in? Because to have faith means I have to be able to identify myself and the object that I have faith in. You know? So that's the whole point is, okay, he's the Savior. How is he the Savior? You know what I'm saying? So you have to be able to discuss these points. Otherwise, then it's just sentiment. That may be some nice sentiment, but it won't actually give you relief from material entanglement. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Because it says that you can't understand Bhagavan through this mixed logic, but even in these empirical sciences, like even engineering or any science, you have to have faith that what you're being taught is correct. So there has to be faith there. Because you don't have direct perception of, you have to accept that these laws of physics are working, or, like when I studied anatomy, I've never dissected a body, but I had to accept that what the textbook was saying is right, There are parallels that if you establish that to these people who are intelligent,
mm-hmm.
then they can see that, the same process can work for spiritual understanding. You have to have that faith, so take that first step.
Yes, that's very good. Because that's he's making that point here. Unless certain preliminary views are accepted by the beginning of learning, arithmetic, astronomy, etc., the studies can never have any progress. In the spiritual field also, when the preliminary characteristic revelations are accepted, the subsequent establishments will become realistic. So it's the same principle. Like you say, there's some basic principles you have to accept. Then those building blocks and those that faith that it works, they're all the corollaries. Because corollaries means they haven't been proven to be true, but they haven't proven them to be false. So it's basically, it's standing as no one's found that it doesn't work. Like that. So then is there, so in the same way as if you accept these 12 points, then the whole approach to philosophy and religion will become realistic. Because then you can actually get to the point. But otherwise if these 12 aren't there, there's going to be a problem, because they're very logical. I am existent, because otherwise some are sitting there, do I exist or do I not? But who's asking? Is your BMW asking if it exists? No, so that's the point. So who's asking? So that means you exist. If you can ask, means you exist. But they get into this whole thing, like that. Do I exist? Do I not exist? Basically, it's just a way of talking about yourself without looking as if you're, puffed up or anything. At the same time as, you know what I'm saying? It balances between insecurity and pride, like that. Because, if I exist and I'm stupid, then I'm useless and I become insecure. So I don't know if I exist. So even no matter how stupid I am, if there's a possibility I don't exist, then there's no need to become insecure. Does that make sense? So the stuff works very well for, passing the time and all that. Like that. Two, I will continue to exist. Not that I exist now, but in the future I will continue to exist. Because otherwise then those who are trying to extinguish the soul, right? Either they don't know if the soul is there because they just see material energy, so I'm part of the material energy, so do I exist separately? Right? But if you're able to make that query and to observe, it means yes. And it's not only that, in the future you will continue. Right? So you're separate from the material energy, and you will continue to exist. Not that you will extinguish at the time of death or any other time, you will extinguish that.
Then three, there's inherent bliss in me.
The bliss is not coming from the material energy. Right? It's inherent in the soul. Like that. So when the soul is in contact, which is sentience, is in contact with sentience, then that bliss becomes realized. But otherwise, it's not coming from the material energy, right? So this, all this thing then cuts out all your materialism and your, you know, extinctionalism, right? Everything like that all becomes, you know, your sentimentalism, your positivism, all these different things, or then your, what's the other one? You know, not sarcasm. Pessimism, yeah. Pessimism, you're not sure if you exist or not. So here, your positivism, your pessimism, all these different forms of your Buddhism, all these isms, all become canceled by all this because they all have problem with these.
And for a certain great principle is there as a shelter of my bliss. Right?
So there is a greater principle like that. So then something is there. We're not the actual controllers.
It is my characteristic nature to be depending upon that great shelter,
right?
And so it's inherent that the living entity has to be dependent. He can't be separate. If he is, then why is he having so many questions,
right? Does that make sense? You know, think about it. What religion is God? You know what I'm saying? He is religion. He doesn't have to think about it and worry about it. He is religion. Right, because he is nature. Religion means the inherent nature in something. So he is nature. He is existence. Right? He is knowledge, action, everything like that. So he doesn't have a religion. He is religion. Just like God's not in a particular rasa. He is rasa. Does that make sense? So that we have to sit there and contemplate it, and by contemplating or acting within it, we attain some form of perfection means that we are dependent upon that supreme. Right? Does that make sense?
Okay, then I am eternally the follower of that shelter. So it's not just that.
Okay, there's a greater power there, but there is a relationship. I am dependent upon him. You know, and then that dependency is not temporary. It's not that I'll merge or I'll extinguish my existence or anything. I will continue to be involved. Right?
The shelter is exceedingly beautiful.
It means that whatever it is, it is what is attracting my attention. Whatever is there that I'm finding of niceties in the world, you know, and the be good, be nice, anything that I appreciate, anything that is special, that's all coming from this supreme shelter.
I am not powerful enough to discard that shelter.
Otherwise, you know, once I understand all this, then they may become proud and think, now I can function separately, but that won't happen. So it's different from the other one that I will always be connected.
I said, yeah. Depending, I am eternally follower of that shelter. I am not powerful enough to discard like that.
It means I will always be the shelter, but I could give that up. No, this soul can't. Because otherwise the impersonalist then will say that I can give this up.
The present condition of mind is remorseful. Right?
The present being in the material world is not ideal. It's all the different elements of, you know, temporariness, this birth, death, old age, and disease. Everything is that we're looking for in an environment of ignorance, you know, dealing with senses that aren't very necessarily to the most ideal. And everything like that. So whatever is the situation, we're not actually properly situated in our constitutional position.
It is fit for me to culture again the servitudinal association of that shelter by discarding this remorseful condition.
So it's proper for me to again take up that mood of service, since I'm dependent upon and eternally connected with and associated with that shelter. Then it's appropriate that I, giving up this material endeavor, take up the spiritual in relationship with that supreme shelter. This world is not my eternal abode. Yeah, because the eternal abode means the material world is temporary, so this is not actually my place. If it was, why would I be disturbed? Right? If you're in your natural place, you're comfortable. Right? I do not have any eternal well-being by the development of this world. It means whatever happens in this world, whatever is developed, that will not add in any way to my eternal development. Right? The material world develops, but that's, I am being separate from that material world. I don't get the benefit. I may get some nice experiences, but as far as me developing, that's not going to happen. Right? So the eternal well-being, may get some temporary, but that's all. Does this make sense? Right? So these 12, you see, is they cut all the other philosophies. Like that. You know, there's one, there's not two, three, or many. Right, so that brings it back to there. I have that relationship, so I'm always going to be there. And that is superior to this material energy. Right, so the material energy is not supreme. Right, so it cuts out, this constitutional nature. This reasoning cuts out all the other mundane topics that we've discussed up to now. Like that. Does that make sense? That's why these 12 are important, because it deals with everything that they go wrong on. Right? You could also take those 12 and, inverse it, and say, what is your concept of existence? What that concept of existence, what will it be in the future? You know what I'm saying? So these points could be used even to question other schools. Does that make sense? And that's where you'll see the difference. So then whatever they say, then you bring it back to the point that's here. And it's just logical. You've established the Vaishnav Siddhanta without actually revealing, the personal the intimacy of the relationship. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Yeah. And so then, so even in the materialistic science, the mixed reasoning is made liable to accept certain amount of characteristic knowledge. So your mundane knowledge has to work on some of these principles. It has to have some faith. It has to have some touch of the characteristic knowledge to even function. And then in the parallel, just like that, to convince someone more, then like Mataji was saying, is that you have you have to have some faith in those principles to even be able to work with the subject matter. So if you want to work with constitutional nature of the soul, you have to accept these principles. Right? Then from there, then by working with the mixed knowledge, very easily you can transform that mixed into constitutional. Does that make sense? Yes.
Is it constitutional knowledge connected to the realization?
Isn't it connected to realization? Yes, but there's some basic fundamentals of this knowledge. You know what I'm saying? There's some basic fundamentals of it. Okay, so 23. A certain group of people are there who are unable to determine their doctrine by the help of characteristic realization. But at the same time, they do not totally agree with the materialistic reasoning. Right? So some people, the materialistic reasoning it doesn't really work for them, but they're unable to really, properly appreciate the constitutional reasoning. Depending upon a little of the characteristic knowledge, they accept the Supreme Lord as a principle. They take recourse to meditational samadhi under the influence of, Gnosticism. G-N-O-S-T?
Gnostic. Gnosticism. Since that samadhi is not a characteristic one, some type of deceptive thought is appeared in it. Because of that deception, even after breaking through the gross materialistic world, they will be unable to have a glimpse of the transcendence. The reason is that the unconditional reality is not realized without the aid of characteristic samadhi. In that artificial meditation of samadhi, they will be able to see the signal world or the subtle material world and feel that they have seen the ultimate abode of the jiva souls. The single world, linga jagat, is nothing but the subtle principle of the gross world. The difference between the gross world and the signal world is that the first one is perceivable by the sense organs, whereas the second one is only perceived by the mind. Right? So you're going to have those persons that they're, how you say, they take some of the constitutional, but they can't take it, they take help of it, but they can't totally take everything. That full surrender and all these different things like that. That kind of personal element, that relationship. So they believe in a supreme being, they meditate upon this, and they'll come to some kind of what they would think are spiritual understandings, because they will see things, they will be able to perceive things that are not visible to the senses. Right? So what they think, that's spiritual, but actually that's just the subtleties of the material world. Right? Just the subtle how the whole thing is working. But they think that's the nature of the soul. But no, that's just the nature of the subtle body. The soul is beyond that. So they're not dealing on the mundane, they're not dealing on the spiritual, they're in between. Does that make sense? Right? So this is like a mix. The material world is of two types, namely gross materialistic and the luminous signal world, which is more subtler than the first one. The astral body spoken of by the Theosophists is the luminous material body. The signal body is still more subtle principle, and also known as mental body. The subtle occult world mentioned in the Patanjali Shastra and by the Buddhistic yogis is nothing but the signal world. Right? So here he's giving the... So that means even there they're talking about the astral body, they're not actually talking about the mind, they're just talking about the illuminated material body. Right?
It's like the chronic body.
Basically like that. You know, so, but here is that then, so he's saying the Patanjali and the Buddhists, then when they're dealing in their meditation, then what they're dealing with then is the mind. They're dealing with the subtle body. But these others are dealing with something still more gross. It's subtler than the gross body, but it's not actually dealing on the platform of mind like that. But the transcendental principle is quite uncommon from all these things. The state of Kaivalya mentioned in the Patanjali Shastra is only a contentional thought of the gross and subtle matter. Nothing about the transcendental principle is revealed by it. So even if they talk about it, that's a very important to understand here, is that when other lines, you know, all these philosophies talk about spiritual, transcendental, and liberation. That, you know, and if you do this, you'll experience it. Just because they said it doesn't mean that that's what they're dealing with. They are taking the word and it's actually being identified wrong. What they should be saying is, by following this sadhana and this meditation, you will be able to perceive the mind. Right? But they will say, the spirit, the soul, liberation, oneness with the supreme. They say all these different things. Does that make sense? But that's not what it is. They're saying it's just their imagination, because they don't know anything beyond, and that's what's there.
You know, they perceive things, and then they come up with their philosophy. The child sees the car and sees the parents driving it, and then he goes out in the backyard and gets in his little plastic thing with little pedals on it and makes the appropriate noises and moves the steering wheel and pushes the pedals, and he thinks he's driving just the same as the parents. But it's in his mind. So just because he uses the terminologies and all those things, you know, but it's not. So what he's experiencing is simply his own imagination. Does that make sense? So just because they say liberation doesn't mean that that's what it is. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur has already pointed out here that you have your gross, your subtle, and your transcendental. And within subtle, then you have two levels. The lower level is which is just, he mentions here, the illumination of the material body, you know, or this pranic body, and that what kind of makes it function in that. And then you have the subtle body. Right? So depending upon who they are, they see one or the other and they take that as spiritual. You know, just like for many who are working the be good, be nice field, that when they work on pranamoy, they take it that's great sacrifice and it's spiritual, just because they weren't working for their own sense gratification. So that's a very spiritual thing. But it's not, it's just pranamoy. Spiritual's on the fifth level. They only get to the second level. Right? All of these things are only not getting past the second level. They're dealing on the first and second level. They're not getting past this. Like that. If they're following the Shastra, then they may be getting past. Karmi Mamsa will get to the third level. The Upanishads, you know, those who follow the impersonal can get to the fourth level. Only real Brahmavadis can get to the fifth level. Right? Because they're dealing on transcendence, but only on the Brahman level. And then Paramatma Bhagavan. So,
but basically speaking, everybody here is they're only dealing on the subtle platform. They're just dealing with mind. So unless one, you know, perceiving the super soul surrenders to him in devotion, then only you'll be perceiving the transcendental. Does that make sense? Otherwise, you'll perceive him and think you are that, and then you have a problem because you are not. You know, so it's mundane. Does that make sense?
Delirious.
Yes, delirious. Delirious. Okay, so you saw a lot of that up at Haridwar.
Greatly. I was fascinated with this term of being intoxicated. I'm not sure what it's like to be intoxicated.
It's an intoxication. Otherwise, how do people go on with it? Because if everybody looked at it with the starkness of reality that it is, then they would have a problem. And then what do you do with all these unemployed souls? Right? They would make a lot of trouble for themselves and everybody else. So therefore, better they're engaged, you know, like that. And for someone who's serious, then coming out of this intoxication state, then they should come out with come from the mundane to the actual transcendental. Because then they will continue to be active and to be fruitful. But now it is on the spiritual platform as opposed to the material. Like that. Does that make sense? Yes. So then the delirium is over. Okay. Nothing about the transcendental principle is revealed by it, by all this Buddhistic or yogic meditation. The God accepted during the stage of performance is not seen after the attainment of Kaivalya, and nothing has been mentioned about the relation of that God with a jiva who has attained Kaivalya. Right? Because they're meditating on this form of the Lord, but there's never any attain, means that meditation, when you come to that state of whatever it is they're trying to obtain, then it's not in connection with that person, right? So it's not actually, they're not actually dealing with the Supreme. If the jivas who have attained Kaivalya get merged with that God, then this doctrine is non-different from monism. Right, because you have to take what the result is. Right? Does that make sense? So someone steams it, then fries it. Someone fries it and then steams it. But at the end of the day, it's the same thing. So if they take it and without working on a personal God, they merge, or they work with a personal, throw them out and become God, or they meditate upon the person and then meditating then merge into that person, you end up with the same thing. Right? So that form is just monism. The Yoga Shastra, Theosophy, Patanjali Shastra, etc. are not useful for the eternal well-being of the jivas. Among many types of secondary stages existing between the gross materialistic principle up to the transcendence, the Yoga Shastra may be said as one in them. Those who inquire after transcendental bliss cannot have any taste for it. Right, so he's saying that there are many secondary stages. Right? You have the gross, then you have the secondary stages, then you have transcendence. Right? So the secondary stages means you're dealing with the subtleties like that. So those different kinds of things come from the meditation. There's many varieties of them. But, and it's just saying Yoga Shastra is only one of them. Right? It's not it's the main or the primary, it's just one of them. It may be prominent in the Vedic term sense, but it's still just one of them. So it still has no real value in Krishna consciousness. Make sense? Yeah. Okay. So we'll continue with 24 tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.
Okay, 8th is Friday, so it looks like it'll be Thursday.
I have to go to Australia on Monday for 3 weeks.
I mean, on the 4th?
On this Monday.
Oh.
I'm going to miss everything.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Okay, but you can get the recordings.
So,
okay.
Yeah. I've got black and glue all over my hands. I'm not going to